Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Last night, the latest version of Basketball Voltron finally took the court, and we finally saw what it looked like. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on the floor together in Clipper gear for the first time. And to add even more juice to it, they were doing it against the best team in the East, the Boston Celtics. So, the result was, well, it was something. Kind of sloppy, sort of ugly, pretty messy. But on top of that, I would still take 7 games of that in a heartbeat in June. In fact, I would take 82 more games like that between now and then. As Pat Beverly said coming off the floor, quote, "That bleep was fun as hell."
It was fun as hell.
That bleep was fun as hell.
It was fun as hell.
Sure as hell was. And that's why the Clippers and their front office did what they had to do, did what they did over the summer to get Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on the same roster and to keep as much of the existing roster as they could. Why? Because that bleep was fun as hell.
It was fun as hell.
Fun as hell. Still pretty ugly, but fun as hell. And by ugly, I mean 40 turnovers between the two teams. 23 from the Clippers, who were chucking it all over the gym last night. But it's to be expected. It's practically still the preseason for the Clippers. Or at the very least, that was their first game of the regular season. Everybody's out there. They're trying to feel each other out. They're trying to share the basketball. If anything, they tried to share the ball too much. The first 3 quarters were kind of ugly from both teams. The fourth quarter, though, in overtime, much better. Well, except for the part where the refs were insisting on reminding everybody that there were 3 teams on the floor last night. The Celtics, the Clippers, and the refs. Like, you think Kawhi, PG, and Kemba are exciting? Don't you ever sleep on Eric Dowen, Mark Davis, and Nick Bouchard. Well, actually, go ahead and nap it out on all of them, because that crew wanted to review everything in the fourth quarter. But when they finally got the hell out of the way, that's when that game finally got good. And when it mattered most, it went from ugly to cold-blooded, like this from Kawhi.
Right corner now, Beverly. Back to Leonard on the right wing. Drives down the right alley. He attacks the cup, and he caught a body. Daniel Tice, watch your head inside. Kawhi Leonard stuffs it with the right hand. Staples Center in awe of the elevation of the claw.
Clippers radio on the call. I'm never going to clown a guy for trying to block a dunk, because it's not a matter of if you get dunked on in the NBA, it's a matter of when. And if you don't ever get dunked on, you're not trying. But Kawhi gave DT the Alex Caruso treatment. But the Celtics were still right there. They weren't giving in. And then you had Jason Tatum destroying PG's ankles to tie that game at 97.
Hand off Tatum. Tatum, right-hand dribble, steps back, breaks the ankle of Paul George, and drills the 3 to tie it with the country watching.
Oh, somebody's grandma just tripped me. Oh, that was nasty, wicked, stinky. Get off your butt, son.
Cornbread getting after it. Cedric Maxwell, Celtics radio. That was stinky. He put him in the ground. Tice goes on a poster, and then George goes into the ground. Then on to overtime. You had Marcus Smart making an absolutely ridiculous deflection, followed by the ultimate bounce off the opponent move as he was going horizontal out of bounds.
Marcus Smart, good ball denial. Stays with it, deflects it, saves it.
How about the effort? He doesn't want Kawhi to get a touch. Gets a piece in that passing lane and lays out and right into us.
Off the foot of Leonard, Celtic ball.
Great play. However, the real star, the guy who won that game for the Clippers, was one Patrick Beverly, a.k.a. Pat Bev, a.k.a. Mr. 94 Feet. And not just because he had 14 points, not just because he had 16 rebounds, and not just because he played the kind of defense that you have come to expect from him, but because he had not one, but 2 clutch threes in overtime. First, you had this.
George in the lane, kick it out left corner. Beverly, 3 ball.
He got it again! Patrick Beverly holds the pose. It's pretty. It's so pretty in Staples Center.
It is, and that's why the Clippers are so nasty. and stinky and filthy. It's because they've got Kawhi, PG, and Lou Williams on the floor in a crunch situation. You cannot double everybody. You've got to leave somebody open. Boston opted for Beverly. He didn't mind. He didn't take that as a sign of disrespect. In fact, he respected the decision. Quote, if I was a coach, I'd leave me open all the time, end quote. But then he did exactly what you've come to expect Pat Bev to do in the clutch. Come up big.
Kick it out, far corner, Beverly, another three ball. Bullseye, Patrick Beverly, Mr. 94 feet, Mr. Clutch.
All of that, if you're starting to get the feeling that this is a big Pat Beverly house, it is, it always has been. Doc Rivers said afterwards,
I thought he literally single-handedly willed that game, you know, with his effort.
How many times have you heard him say that about that guy? How many times have you watched him and had that same thought yourself? Quote, I thought he literally single-handedly willed that game with his effort. How many times? Like every time I watch Pat Beverly, I think that. They don't win every single time out, but every single time I can see this guy imposing his will on a game. And more often than not, it does work out. On a night where Kawhi and PG were supposed to be the big stars, Beverly was the biggest. But that doesn't mean that Kawhi didn't do his part, because Kawhi finished it off with this.
Smart will inbound on the far sideline, 1.6 left. Walker, left corner three. It was blocked by Kawhi Leonard. The claw saves the day, and the 2-1-3 connection is 1-0 in Clippers history.
That block was so huge, Kawhi damn near celebrated it. That's how big that was. Paul George, though, did celebrate it.
That's the finals MVP, man. He knows when it's time to take over. He's been there and he's won championships for multiple ball clubs. So he knows how to stomp and put that foot on the opponent's neck. And, you know, that's what you saw him do tonight.
It's cold-blooded. He's exactly right. This guy's won championships with multiple franchises. He knows what it is to get a boot on an opponent's throat and stomp him out. That's the LA Clippers now. Stomping on throats, choking people out, and that's why last night was a warning shot to the rest of the association, because they were nowhere near perfect. There was all sorts of rust, there was some awkwardness, and it was still damn good. And that bleep was fun as hell. LA is now officially the Mecca. Isn't that right, big baller?
Yes!
Mike Gundy is my guest. Mike, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. It's been a long time since you had me on. You must be busy out there.
Not so busy. Not so busy, and I should have done it sooner, so go ahead and accept my apology for that. Mike, good to have you back, though. Listen, lots to cover. Let me ask you about Kansas. You beat them on Saturday 31-13. I bring it up, Mike, because that was your first on-the-field meeting between you and Les Miles. What kind of memories do you have of working with him back in the day, and what was it like to go up against him on Saturday?
It was a little unusual with him being here, particularly pregame, meeting him on the middle of the field. Coach and I worked together as assistants first. He was the coordinator and I was the quarterback coach. And then when he took over as the head coach, I became the coordinator. And we had a lot of really good times together, scheming offensive plays. And he's done a lot during his career to help me offensively. And so it was a little bit unusual, but it was nice to see him back out there. And our guys played well against Kansas. We left a lot of points on the board. We didn't play very well on special teams, but it was good to get a win and keep moving forward.
Mike Gundy joining us. Mike, let me ask you about Chuba Hubbard. 122 yards, two touchdowns in the win. That was his seventh game with 100 or more yards and two TDs, which is the second most in a season in Big 12 history. I mean, for perspective, Ricky Williams had eight games like that in 97. So how special then is Hubbard?
He really is, Jim. He's like Secretariat. When you watch him run in a game and he gets in the open field, he just keeps going and going and going and pulling away from the defense. It's pretty amazing. But he's a special young man because he's very powerful and he has tremendous speed. But he stayed really humble. He's unselfish. He's been a really good teammate for everybody. He's just starting to develop, Jim. So he's only played in 13 games in his career. So he's just getting going. But he's an awesome young man. He's kind of what you want college football players to be about. He just likes to be on the team, and he likes to do his job on Saturdays.
Contractors everywhere can rely on Ferguson for a wide variety of specialty products, tools, supplies, and services. Thanks to their pro pickup service, you can shop online and pick up in store, leaving you with more time to focus on the work at hand. With more than 1,000 locations across the nation and expert associates ready to help out with any job, you can trust that doing business with Ferguson will be the easiest part of your hard day of work. So visit Ferguson.com and find a location near you. Mike Gundy, my guest. So Mike, take me back. When you were recruiting him out of Edmonton, Alberta, you were the only head coach who made that trip to visit him. What did you see in him that made you think that he was something special? And then what was that trip to Alberta like?
Well, one, it was really cold up there. We saw a 185-pound high school football player from Canada that the rumor was that could potentially be fast enough if he went just track to maybe running on the Canadian national team in the Olympics this summer. Now, that's not going to happen because we've put 22 pounds on him, and he's still fast, but not fast enough with all the weight to run the Olympics. So we went and watched him play on video and then checked him out. And, I mean, he just ran through guys like they weren't there. So our only concern was, would he be able to take the physical aspect of football in this country compared to playing up there? And he's done really well. He's been awesome. He's taken a lot of hits, and he's still going. So it was obviously well worth the trip. We were concerned about the other schools in the Northwest, your Oregons, your Boise States, Washingtons, Stanfords, those schools that could maybe jump in on him. They took their shots at him, but he held with us, and he was a great take for us.
Oklahoma State head coach Mike Gundy joining us. You know, obviously, Mike, I could do a whole interview on that alone. One more thought, though. The story from the trip where you stopped off at a gas station to get a ham and Swiss sandwich, what did you end up getting, and then how did that sandwich go for you?
Well, the sandwich didn't go good at all, and I'm sure, as you know, you follow it close enough when you talk to us. You know, we run from one school to the other in private planes and flying all over the country. And so I went and did all my work there to high school, and I was driving back in the rental car to go back to the airport to fly out to Santa Clara to see a fullback that same day. But anyway, I went into a gas station to just at least grab a sandwich, and they had advertised ham and Swiss, so I got it. I don't know what it was. I'm sure it's some kind of Canadian ham, but it was like sliced really, really thin, and you could like see through it. It was somewhat transparent. So I didn't do real well with it. I went ahead and got my official visit done that night in Santa Clara, and then fired up some Mexican food up in Northern California later that night.
Mike Gundy joining us. All right, I've got some Canadian listeners. Maybe they can set us straight on exactly what that was, the kind of meat that you can see through. We're talking Mike Gundy. Let me ask you about Spencer Sanders, the freshman. He was named quarterback at the start of the year. What do you make, Mike, of the way he's grown over the course of the season, especially as it relates to his decision-making on the field?
He's much better in the last month. Early in the year, he was playing well, and then he went through a phase for about 3 weeks where he was trying to do too much, and he put the ball on the ground. And we know at any level, if the quarterback puts the ball on the ground, you can't play. So we challenged him. We implemented a lot of drills during practice, and over the last month, he's done a much better job of keeping two hands on the ball and protecting the football, and he continues to improve. Over the last few weeks, we've given him a little bit more each week. He's been a really, really good runner for us. You know, he's a legitimate threat running the ball. And with Chuba, he's come on, and he's matured. He's a very emotional, very prideful young man. So he takes everything personal. He wants every play to work. He wants to be successful every time, which is good. He's now going through the transition of learning to be a quarterback where you have to keep emotions intact and think throughout the game, and he's gotten better each week.
Mike Gundy joining us. In fact, Mike, earlier this season you compared Sanders' development to playing video games, and in particular Donkey Kong. Legend has it, back in the day you used to be pretty solid at Donkey Kong at Godfather's Pizza in Midwest City. How good were you, and how much time would you spend playing it?
I was legit in Donkey Kong, and if I got on the game and people walked in, you know, because we rode our bikes up there back in the day, which now kids don't ride bikes anymore, but we would jump on our bikes and ride up there and start playing, me and my buddy Mitch Simons, And if we got on Donkey Kong and anybody else walked in, they just left because they knew that there was no Donkey Kong for them for like 2 hours. So we had some great times doing that. And that's what Spencer's gone through. You know, he's trying to get through the different stages of developing himself as a quarterback. And it's kind of like the different levels in Donkey Kong. And he needed a lot of work to get to the elevators level and make that last jump. And he's starting to get closer. He still hadn't got to the point where he can jump from that elevator and make it to that fourth window.
It's such a perfect analogy. It's a perfect analogy, but is there anybody in your dressing room who's even heard of Donkey Kong?
No, not there wasn't any players at all. Now, I have a Donkey Kong at home in my game room.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can wear out my boys because, you know, they play all my young – I say young – 18 and 15, they play those other games, and I don't have a chance to do that and get good at it. But I can take them down and play Space Invaders, Galaga, Donkey Kong, and wear them out.
I was just going to say, Mike, I have to know what else is in that room. Space Invaders, Donkey Kong, some Defender, maybe
Defender,
Asteroids.
No doubt.
Defender was the
Defender
best.
Defender machine now.
Was not the best Defender?
It was awesome, yeah. How you could flip that reverse with your thumb. That's good. Those are good times.
Yeah, except when you try to explode those pods, right? That never worked out well.
No, it didn't. And you didn't get enough of the explosives. But those are definitely good games.
How about Missile Command?
Yeah, I was all over it, man. And the robot game, Mr. Roboto or whatever that was, I was into that for a while too.
How about Miss Pac-Man?
Yeah, and Asteroids.
Loved Asteroids. That was great.
No doubt.
Dig Dug, Centipede, Frogger.
I'm all over Frogger, all over Centipede, all those games. And Moonraker. Remember, they had Moonraker that came out that was pretty good for a while. It was kind of like Defender, but you were driving a machine that was supposed to be on the moon.
Moonraker. Mike Gundy joining us. Again, I can keep on that, too. Before you go, since we talked about Sanders, let me ask you about Drew Brown. Mike, he battled with Sanders for the starting job. He was one of the captains for Saturday's game. What's it say about the level of respect that you and everybody in that program have for him that he was not starting a quarterback, but he was still a captain?
I mean, he's been awesome. The most difficult things for coaches to deal with, or for me personally, is when a player gets injured, for them to not be able to finish the season. And then when you have another player that deserves the right to get on the field, but it's just hard to put him in based on the way the things fall. Drew is thinking about being a football coach, a college coach. He's in an unbelievable intern program right now, and he's proven to everybody that he can stay strong and deal with issues that aren't easy to take care of, being I'm watching the guy play. So he comes in Saturday and plays really good. And I can't say enough about him. I mean, character, and like I talked about with Chuba, with being unselfish and humble, well, Drew's the same way. I mean, he's done everything we've asked him to do. And you just can't say enough about young men that are willing to do that in society today.
Mike Gundy, my guest. All right, so finally, you've won 3 straight heading to West Virginia. What do you make of the way the team has shown up in November when it matters most?
Over the last 3 to 4 weeks, our guys have played really well. We're not giving up big plays on defense. We're getting a little bit of pressure on the quarterback. We're staying somewhat penalty-free. And our turnovers have been very minimal. That's been the key to success in this conference with all the teams. West Virginia went to Manhattan and won last week. They played a new quarterback, which I'm sure that's who we'll see Saturday. He threw for about 250, a couple touchdowns, didn't turn it over. Defensively, they've played very well. They got 2 down guys that can get pressure on you, and they tackle really well. Other than against Oklahoma, which most people have struggled against Oklahoma, and they didn't play as good against Tech, I'm sure, as they wanted to. Defensively, they've been really good. So we're going to have to go out and play a good game, got to take care of the football, and let it roll. We got to play hard for 60 minutes.
And there's a real good preview right there. You've got Oklahoma State and West Virginia Saturday, noon Eastern. Oklahoma State 7-3. They are number 21 in the CFP. Their head coach, Mike Gundy, my guest. Mike, always great to visit with you. I appreciate the relationship. Great to have you back. Mike, thank you.
You bet, Jim. I look forward to talking to you before the bowl, okay?
I'd love to do that, Mike. I'll take you
all
up
right,
on
guys.
That.
Take care.
All right, so it's been a long, strange, and generally terrible season for the New York Jets, but they have managed to win 2 straight games, which for the Jets would qualify as a streak. That said, it's still not nearly as impressive a streak as the one that Le'Veon Bell tweeted about yesterday. Bell tweeted the following. I done had 5 random HGH blood tests in 10 weeks. At NFL, I'm not doing another after today. Whatever y'all looking for, it obviously ain't there, and I'm not about to keep allowing y'all to stick me with those dirty-ass needles. Find the players who really do that HGH BS and get off me. End of tweet. That right there is one of the best tweets ever. That's an amazing athlete tweet. That's an amazing tweet on so many different levels. First off, it's amazing that he's been, quote, randomly tested 5 times in 10 weeks, especially since only 40 players are tested every week. The ruling had been that 5 random players on 8 random teams each week are to be tested. And yet somehow he's been tested 5 times in 10 weeks. I'm no mathematician, but it seems to me like the odds of that happening would be nuts. And that's only part of the tweet. That's only the first part of the tweet. Then there's his announcement to the league that, quote, I'm not doing another after today. Quote, I'm not about to keep allowing you all to stick me with those dirty ass needles. End quote. And then chasing that and closing it out with, find the players who really do have that HGH BS and get off me. End quote. I wish there was more than one retweet button on a tweet because I'd smash that thing 50 times. And notice I said I would retweet it. Notice I didn't say I would like it. I wouldn't just like it. I would retweet it. Liking a tweet but not retweeting it is for cowards and punk asses. If you like something, retweet it. It's common courtesy, people. Don't be a scared coward. Don't be a bitch. Don't be lazy. Man, put yourself out there. You can't go halfway on that thing. If you're going to like it, retweet it. Push it out there. Scared cowards. In the meantime, Bell was just getting started. I also love the fact that he's accusing the league of using dirty-ass needles. Stop sticking me with dirty-ass needles. But then he was just getting started. If he had stopped right there, that'd be great. But he wasn't. He was not done. Somebody tweeted, quote, it's because you smoked weed and got caught. Them's the rules, fool. End quote. So you wonder, what's Le'Veon Bell going to do with that? Is he going to respond? Is he going to take the bait? Is he going to eat the cheese? Is he going to get hooked? Yes. And it's a good thing. Le'Veon responded by saying, quote, well then, they obviously testing for things then, huh, Goofy? He obviously meant they're testing for the wrong things, but I'm not focused on that. I'm focused on him asking the guy who sent the tweet initially, huh, Goofy? They're obviously testing for the wrong things then, huh, Goofy? But I don't care. I just love an NFL player ending a tweet to a follower with, huh, Goofy? Huh, Goofy. I love that. But not as much as I loved his follow-up tweet. Somebody else then tweeted, quote, Le'Veon complaining about random drug testing like he wasn't caught smoking dope more than once. End quote. To which Bell responded with, quote, you don't need my blood to test me for marijuana, weirdo. I can easily pee in a cup. So an NFL player calling somebody on Twitter goofy is good. An NFL player calling somebody on Twitter a weirdo is way better. That will never fail to crack me up. And the guy does have a point. If your point is the league is singling him out for HGH testing because he failed a marijuana test, then that is a little weird. Because the HGH testing is supposed to be random. And because if you're testing for marijuana, you don't need blood. And if you're testing him and targeting him because of a past violation, then it's not random. And if you're testing for the Kron, you don't need blood. But he wasn't done. He had more that he wanted to say when he met with the media. So he put his phone down and he kept right at it.
Is it random though? Because I feel like every time they hear doing the AGH testing, I get picked.
Yeah, well, I mean, once they decide it's the Jets, then there's a 5 out of 60 chance.
5 out of 60, every time I got picked, every time.
Have you ever won the lottery?
No, I haven't ever won the lottery, no.
Do you think they're targeting you right now?
I don't know, I'm not going to say all that. I'm just saying I'm not doing it no more. I'm not taking no more. They're not getting no more of my blood, so they better use the blood they got right now. That's it.
Well, maybe, and if you know that if you have repeated
well, he knows.
By the NFL
rules, he knows.
Arguably, be subject to a suspension.
I feel like I already did it enough. So, I mean, at the end of the day, if we got to cross that bridge and we get there, then we got to cross that bridge and get there. Like, but I'm saying right now, it's the way I felt today when that whole tweet went out. That's how I felt. It's like,
all right, let me jump in. That reporter said, hey, you know that if you do not agree to submit to a test, that they're going to treat that as a failed test. And he knows that. That's why I said, oh, he knows. He knows because he was suspended 3 games in 2016 after missing a test. So what he's saying is, if it's random, why is it that every time they show up in this facility for an HGH test, I'm the one who's got to do it? I'm not doing it. Not with your dirty-ass needles, and I'm not doing it anymore. But if he doesn't do it, they treat it as a failed test. And then he's looking at a suspension. I kind of get the guy's point. I mean, it is supposed to be random. It sure does seem a little weird that he's gotten dinged 5 times in 10 weeks on a random test. It doesn't seem random. I mean, the math on that is crazy. And it's even worse if you don't like needles. I mean, I don't think anybody loves needles, but getting stuck 5 times in 10 weeks is a lot, especially if you hate needles, especially if you hate, quote, dirty ass needles. But the problem is, this is how the system works. This is how the testing is done. And as crazy as it is that he's been tested 5 times in 10 weeks, you can't put a limit on the number of tests that a guy will receive in a season, because once he hits that number, he'd be free to use HGH or Boroids or whatever they want to use, because they know they won't be tested again. 5 times seems to me like a lot. But if you knew that 5 times was the max and you hit that number, you could run and find a juicer at the nearest Gold's Gym and load up a U-Haul with anything and everything you wanted. So it's kind of hard for there to be a limit in a season or for guys to know when they're going to be tested. Then it's not a drug test. Then it's an intelligence test. But even then, Le'Veon Bell is telling you, man, he's flat out done with your dirty ass needles. He's done with your tests. He's done with people taking his blood. And most of all, he's done with goofs and weirdos on Twitter.
They're not getting no more of my blood, so they better use the blood they got right now.
Isn't that so goofy? Yeah, Le'Veon Bell done acting like he wasn't even popped for testing positive for marijuana. Oh, really, weirdo? If that's the case, why do they need my blood? Normally, I don't think it's the best idea for athletes to get in the mud and respond to trolls, because that's what they want. But sometimes it is the best idea. In that case, it was. In terms of what he does if they show up with their, quote, dirty-ass needles for a 6th time, you know, like he said, he'll jump off that bridge when it comes. But he's already been suspended for not taking the test. So you know that your genes are not just about you. It's something that you share with the people closest to you. Uncovering potential health issues early on can help empower you with information so you and your family can move forward to a healthier future. Which brings me to Ancestry Health. With Ancestry Health, you can discover how your DNA might influence certain health conditions and the steps that you can take with a healthcare provider to chart a healthier path going forward. What I'm saying is this: some health conditions can be influenced by genetics. Ancestry Health looks at a carefully selected set and gives you insights about how they could impact you and your family. Ancestry Health gives you personalized health reports that are easy to understand with actionable insights and access to genetic counseling resources, plus a family health history tool to track generations of health. And of course, you will receive Ancestry DNA ethnicity results that reveal your origins as well. So you really can learn from your genes. Take action for your family. Go to Ancestry.com/Rome. Learn more and get your Ancestry health kit today. That's Ancestry.com/Rome. Ancestry Health includes laboratory tests developed and performed by an independent CLIA certified laboratory partner and with oversight from an independent clinician network, board certified physicians, and genetic counselors. Ancestry Health is not currently available in New York, New Jersey, or Rhode Island. Chris Holtman is my guest. Chris, good to have you on. How are you?
Always great to be with you, Jim. I appreciate your time and appreciate being on with you.
Chris, I appreciate you saying that. I appreciate your time, and it's good to have you back on the show. Thanks so much. So you're four games in, and you've already got wins over teams like Cincinnati and Villanova. I know you don't want to get too carried away, but what has the team shown you, not just in the wins over the good teams, but how they've handled their business in every game thus far?
You know, like any coach right now, it's so early in the season, you're still trying to get a larger sample size than what we have right now. We're four games in, but as you said, you know, we perform well. I think, you know, both games were unique. Cincinnati game, we didn't score in the first 8 minutes. I was starting to question if we were going to be able to score in the first half. But we finally did loosen things up a little bit, and our guys performed really, really well in the second half against, I think, a really good Cincinnati team. And then the Villanova game, Jim, was unique because it was just one of those games where, honestly, you're trying to get out of your players' way. They were so dialed in, so locked in, got off to a 17-3 start against a program that I couldn't have more respect for, and were able to kind of stay at a distance for most of the game.
Chris Holtman joining us. You know, Chris, it's really interesting, the dichotomy between those two games and those two wins. I wanted to ask you about each. Against Cincinnati, you mentioned that you didn't score the ball for the first 8 minutes. Afterwards, you called it, quote, a good old-fashioned rock fight, end quote. So what did you make of your guys, and in particular, Kyle Young, and how he dealt with that rock fight?
Yeah, you know, he's great in a game like that. So Kyle's he's a kid from Ohio that just – he's one of those kids that grew up in kind of a smaller town. He's a really good athlete, 6'8", and he plays off of others. He's one of the rare kids now, Jim, that doesn't need the ball in his hands to feel like he's a part of the game. And that's so different from so many kids, because so many kids grow up with the ball in their hands, whether they're a guard or, honestly, a post player. And he's one of those guys that's kind of always played off other guys, and he had some offensive rebounds that were really key. He really settled us when we needed to be settled in that game. And it's great because this is our youngest team I've ever coached, this team in particular. And that's exciting, but it's nice to have a junior step up in that occasion.
Ohio State head coach Chris Holtman is joining us. And then, Chris, you've got that Villanova game. Like, as you look back over your time in the game, your career, how many times have you gone in against a really high level, really, really good team like Villanova, and then had almost everything go right during the game? And then as a head coach, what do you do to stay out of your players' way?
You know, I'm telling you, it's a surreal feeling that I probably had two or three times where you look out there. I told our athletic director, Gene Smith, before one of our football games this year, I was down on the field. We were down there with recruits. It was a night game. It might have been our Wisconsin football game, Jim. And the energy in the place was unbelievable. You know, I saw our football team come out, and I told him, I said, there's no way we're losing this game tonight. Like, there's no way. You just – There was a feeling that in 5 minutes, you never feel like that as a coach, but there was a feeling 5 minutes into our Villanova game the other night where I just felt like, you know, in reality, like, get out of your players' way. Don't call timeouts. Let them just continue to play off each other. Making shots made a big difference. But we had a laser focus. Now we'll see with the young group. Can we continue that? Can we have that tomorrow night and Monday night? That's the challenge for everybody right now.
We're talking to Chris Holtman. You know, you mentioned, I'm curious, what's it like to get your recruits on the field for a big-time football matchup like that? And then, Chris, what's the relationship like between you and Ryan Day, another young coach who's doing really great things?
He's doing great. I mean, Ryan he's killing it right now. He's killing it. He and his staff are killing it in recruiting. I think what you've seen, obviously, Urban left a situation here that was incredible in terms of the talent and the culture that was in place. And Urban's a guy that I brought him in the day before our Cincinnati game. And, you know, like any, it was our home opener against an in-state school. And I brought him in and I said, hey, Urban, like, how did you deal with the stress of games like this in big games and in every game? And he goes, not very well, because I'm the last person to ask.
Right.
But he's been really good. Ryan's been tremendous. We've spent a lot of time together. We have a great relationship. And like you said, I think to be able to bring, you know, football is a different animal here. And I grew up in Lexington, Kentucky, and I compare it to just the fervor for Kentucky basketball there. It's unlike anything I've ever seen.
Chris Holtmann joining us. I love Lexington. Place also known as Lex Vegas. Chris, what was it like to grow up in that town? I love that town.
Oh, it was great. I mean, it's really an underrated town.
It is.
You probably know this. It's a great city. It's clean. There's a lot to do. It's growing. The climate's great. And then, you know, when you grow up in that city or that surrounding city, you know, it's year-round. It's year-round coverage of that program. And Coach Cal's done an unbelievable job kind of embracing that. I always said if you know, God designed the perfect Kentucky basketball coach, it was Coach Cal, because he's embraced all that. But it's a phenomenal place, great city, loved growing up there.
We're talking to Chris Holtmann. I'm just kind of following you around here, but you mentioned Coach Cal. For those who don't know, I mean, it's easy to look at Cal and to see how slick Cal is, and you see that great rap, and he's got that great presence. For those who don't know, though, what makes him such a unique guy and such a unique basketball figure?
He's really creative, Jim. I think I don't know Cal great. I've got to know a little bit on recruiting trails, but he's really creative, and I think what has propelled him in his career is people do genuinely believe that he's almost got a higher motive in coaching. And I think it's an example for all of us that are kind of following him that are younger coaches. And he really is an advocate of his players and an advocate of trying to create great futures for his players in whatever capacity. And he coaches them hard. I think sometimes that gets underrated. Like, he's on them. He coaches them hard. But you can see, like, he really embraces the idea of trying to create great futures for his players. I think we all do, but he's been a great example of that.
We're talking to Chris Holtmann, and I appreciate your thoughts on that. So, as I mentioned, you've already faced Cincinnati and Villanova, and you've got upcoming non-conference games against North Carolina, Kentucky, and West Virginia. Some coaches might prefer an easier non-conference schedule. You seem to enjoy this. What do you like about it, and what are you hoping to learn from your team in the process?
You know, I think you're hoping you get exposed in a lot of ways. I felt the Big Ten, Jim, last year was the deepest conference in the country, and it was probably proven in the NCAA tournament when we go 7-1 in first round games. There were other really good conferences, but I thought we were the deepest, and we got beat up last year. And I came out of that saying, I'm not sure. We were 12-1 in the non-conference. We had played some good teams, but teams we thought were going to be good power conference schools that didn't have a great year. So I went into this season saying, if we can turn it up just a little bit more and potentially get exposed, I think that will help us in our league. And, you know, you don't have to look far in college basketball to know you can lose on any given night. Tomorrow night we'll need to play well. But I think it's one of those things where I like playing a challenging non-conference. Some people don't. I've tried to embrace it, and I think our guys have too.
We're talking to Chris Holtmann for a few more moments. You know, you were coming off a year or two where you went to the NCAA tournament and you advanced. So there was a lot of buzz around the team coming into this year. But Chris, as you've pointed out, you have a run like that in the tournament, and it can make people forget about the challenges you had to deal with during the regular season. How do you go about dealing with both the hype for this season while learning from last season and making sure everybody remembers we had a nice run, but there were other challenges that we had to face and overcome?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question, because it's been this balance between embracing the fact that, hey, we all want to create expectations. That's part of our job here as a coaching staff, is you're trying to create some level of expectations for your program. And that's a good thing. And yet at the same time, we were 8-12 in league play last year. and we were we made the tournament because of our non-conference. So, you know, we have numbers in our locker room, 8-12 and 15, and then our turnover percent, 8-12 was our conference record, 15 was our total losses. And the reminders that, hey, while we've got a really young group that has certainly some possibilities and some potential this year, we have to be better in certain areas. And it's a reminder for us as a coaching staff. It's a reminder for us as players every time we walk in and out of the locker room.
Chris Holman, my guest. One last thought I've got to hit you on. You're somebody who's always looking to learn and grow as a leader. Among the books you've read are titles like Grit. I've seen and read this book. It's a great book. Also, Give and Take. What are the books that you've read recently that have resonated with you the most?
You know, Brad Stevens recommended to me the Teenage Brain, and I've dove into that one a little bit, which is just talking about young people and the brain and how a young person's brain thinks and how it gets developed. I'm probably going to dive into a book, Stillness is the Key by Ryan Holiday, which is kind of a leadership book. And last year I read Culture Code, which is a book on, you know, companies, and really it's companies, and it also looked at programs like the Spurs and the culture they've created. So those three.
I like that. This is a big Ryan Holiday house too. Chris, I wonder about the teenage mind. I've got a teenager, a 14-year-old. This middle-aged mind keeps knocking heads with the teenage mind. What do we have to keep in mind about the teenage mind?
It's always growing. It's always growing and developing, and it can drive us all crazy. I've got a 9-year-old, and I'm telling you, I regret. I mean, I wish she could stay 9, because I hear these stories of yours and others of, you know, 13, 14, 15-year-old girls, and to be honest with you, I'm dreading it, Jim.
You know, but then, Chris, it changes back, right? Like, I've got an 18-year-old and a 14-year-old, and the 18-year-old just went to college. We just dropped him off at Wisconsin, and we were knocking heads, and all of a sudden it just clicks. You know, it just kicks in, and then everything's good, but the pendulum is constantly swinging back and forth. So
that means you've raised him pretty well if it's clicking back at 18, 19. That means you've raised him pretty well.
I'll take that. He is the head basketball coach at Ohio State, Chris Holman, back on the program. Chris, always enjoy the conversation. Really well done. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Sounds great, Jim. Thanks a lot. Great
to be with you. Appreciate you. You too. Coach, thank you. Eric Armstead is my guest. Eric, it's good to have you on. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good, good. So let me start with that Arizona game, if you don't mind. You beat them Sunday in a game where you had yet another sack. Before we get into the game overall, your sack was really critical in determining the outcome of that game. To set the stage, Arizona's up 26-23, just over 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. They had a 3rd and 5. You loop around, you come flying in, you hit Kyler Murray. So what did you see on that play, and then how good did it feel to make that play in that spot?
Yeah, you know, it was a huge part of the game. We definitely needed to get a stop and get the ball back to our offense, and Coach dialed up a good play. We were running the stunt, and, you know, Fred Warner, our linebacker, did a good job of creating a lane for me and coming. I was wrapping around and was able to get it down. So it was a huge play. Definitely felt good, and, you know, kind of changed the momentum of the game.
Glad you mentioned Fred Warner. I'm going to get back to him in a minute. But that forced a punt, and then 8 plays later, the offense scores. You take a 30-26 lead. Then you guys closed out on defense with another fumble recovery. And, I mean, there have been some great wins this year, but how did it feel to come through with that late comeback the way you guys did to pull it off the way you did?
Yeah, it was big. You know, we've been battling through adversity for some years now. And now, you know, this season we're finding ways to win those close games. And, you know, it definitely feels good. You know, we got off to a slow start throughout the game, but, you know, we kept fighting, kept battling, and were able to get the job done in the end.
Eric Armstead joining us. You know, you just said it. There's been some adversity in recent years. This is a team that was 4-12 last year. You're 9-1. You're playing in prime time on a regular basis. You have serious Super Bowl aspirations. I know you're going to tell me you're worried about the thing that's right in front of you. I respect that. But, man, how much fun is it to be a San Francisco 49er right now?
It's a lot of fun, you know. You talk about, you know, what we kind of went through the past couple of years, and to be on this new path and winning, you know, it's a lot of fun, a lot of excitement going around here, and we're trying to keep it going.
You know, John Lynch was saying that he felt like you started to show flashes last season, and he had a really good feeling about this year. You're never going to make excuses, but the fact is you had to deal with some injuries and the frustration that comes along with not being on the field. When you look at the impact that you're having this season, do you feel like, man, I knew I could always play like this. I just need to get a break, get a lucky bounce.
Yeah, I thought so. You know, I always knew what I was capable of. I was confident in my ability. You know, dealing with injuries throughout the year, you know, it's a part of football, but I knew what I was capable of when I was on the field.
So your name is now getting run, and you're getting attention as a potential Pro Bowler. What's it mean to hear that, and what would it mean for you to go to the Pro Bowl this year?
You know, that'd be great. That'd be a great honor. You know, some recognition from the fans and, you know, colleagues and coaches around the league. And, you know, that's what you play for, you know. I want to be, you know, respected by my peers as, you know, a great player in this league. And, you know, that's what I go out every day and work hard to try to achieve.
Eric Armstead of the 49ers is my guest. Now, last season you were playing six technique, whereas this season you've been playing more nine technique. For those who do not know, what is the difference between the two, and how much more aggressive can you be in nine technique?
Yeah, so six technique is head up on the tight end, and the nine technique is outside shade of the tight end. And the two positions are a little different because in the six technique you have to read more and kind of react. In the nine technique, you're able to fire off and kind of attack more and you know, be more physical and be more aggressive in your approach. So it's just two different styles. Some teams play six, start playing a nine technique this year.
Eric Armstead's my guest. I appreciate the explanation. Now, you mentioned Fred Warner. I've had a number of your teammates on defense on this program over the course of the year, including Fred Warner, Dee Ford, DeForest Buckner. When did you first realize how special this defense could be? I mean, was it back in camp or was it during the season?
Yeah, you know, when the roster was coming together throughout the offseason, you know, we're making new additions to our team. You know, I feel like we had a chance to be special. Then it just took us, you know, gelling together, you know, out there on the practice field and getting to know one another and start playing together. So, you know, throughout the preseason even, you know, we didn't have our complete team out on the field. But, you know, after week one, continuing to play together more and more, I thought we started to gel together and that we could be a special group.
And then on defense, the other topic that keeps coming up with guys like Ford, Buckner, and Warner, of course, is your D coordinator, Robert Saleh. This guy's electric on the sideline during games. We all see that from the outside. But what's he like off the field, and what makes him so unique?
Oh, yeah, he's a great leader of our defense. You know, he's the play caller, puts us in position to be successful. He brings that fiery energy that you talked about every day. You know, that inspires us to go out there and play at a high level.
Now, you're the pride of Pleasant Grove High School near Sacramento. What was life like for you to grow up there?
Sacramento was great. You know, I love being from there. Take pride in being from Sacramento. A lot of pride in my city, and you know, I love being from there, and you know, love representing that area. And you know, growing up, I just wanted to, me and my friends just wanted to show the talent that was from that area, and you know, kind of represent our city well.
I love that. I love that town, and I love that you're repping Sacramento the way you are, but it's even more than that. For instance, you've been really involved in the community in Sacramento. You have focused on education in undeserved neighborhoods, and one of the things you've said is, the city raised me. I have a responsibility to the next generation, end quote. You know, to me, that's a really, really mature approach for somebody your age. Where does the mindset come from, and then why is it so important for you to already look out for the next generation?
Yeah, you know, the mindset comes from my family, in the way I was raised, and also just sitting down and thinking about, you know, all that I've been fortunate enough to accomplish and been blessed with in my life. I feel like it's my responsibility to give back and try to help the next generation of young people. And, you know, looking at all the blessings and all the things that God has done in my life, I want to reciprocate those things in others' lives.
Eric Armstead, my guest, good for you. So Sunday night, you've got Aaron Rodgers coming to your house as a defensive lineman. What kind of thoughts do you have when you watch him on film, and how do you go about trying to make things uncomfortable for him?
Oh, great player, future Hall of Famer. Going to be a big challenge for us, but, you know, these games are super exciting. And, you know, this is right where we want to be in these exciting big games against great players. You know, we wouldn't have it any other way.
And then finally, you've got the new building, but San Francisco has such an amazing tradition of winning, and it seems like, man, all that juice, all the heat, all the buzz is coming back. What's it like with the 49er fans returning the way they have and showing up the way they are?
Man, it's been awesome. Niner faithful has been representing strong, making it loud here in Levi's, making it loud even in some of our road games. They've been showing out and supporting, so we definitely need to keep that going. I know it helps us so much on defense with the crowd noise and us being able to get off on the ball, and it really hinders the offense. And so, you know, they've been showing up and loud and supporting, and, you know, we appreciate them for that.
Let's go to Gardena. Joe, it's good to have you, Joe. How are you?
Jim, how you doing, man?
Good, dude. You?
Ah, man, I can't complain, man. I'm not a radio nerd. I'm just a regular old guy with a low credit score, man.
I got you, dude. I got you. It's all good, man. You're welcome here.
Listen, Jim, man, let me get into my question. Before I get into my question, I want to talk about exactly what it is that I want to ask. The decision to why Kawhi Leonard came to the Los Angeles Clippers. I honestly don't think it was because of Paul George. I think Kawhi Leonard came to the LA Clippers for one reason and one reason only. And that is to put himself on top of the NBA Mount Rushmore, to win a championship with a team that has never won one for the second time. Who else has done it, Jim? Nobody. That's where my question comes. Where do you put Kawhi Leonard if he wins the title this year with the LA Clippers on the NBA Mount Rushmore?
You know, normally, Joe, I appreciate that. Yeah, I'll tell you what else I appreciate, Joe. I appreciate you calling up and saying, hey, listen, I'm not a radio nerd. I'm just an old guy with a low credit score. Hey, Jim, just so you know, I'm the radio nerd now. I'm just a guy that's incurred a lot of different debt in a lot of different places, and now I'm an old guy, and there's no way in hell I'm paying that down. Let's go to Christian in Maine. Christian, how are you?
Hey, Rummy, long time no speak.
What do you got,
man?
How
you been? Anyway, I wanted to talk about this big, big game coming up between the Cowboys and my Patriots.
Sure.
And the battle's not going to be won on the trenches. It's not going to be won on the offense. It's going to be won in the bathroom to see which owner can sniff the most cocaine off a stripper's butt, dude.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call. Yeah, not like the call that I was looking for, no.
Good night now!